Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to your Valley Sports Plug. It's Thursday, December 14th, 2024, and this is a roundtable special. Got a couple special guests for you this evening. I am, of course, your host, Chris Patrick, joined by my wingman and co-host, Mr. Benjamin, and co-host on another podcast, Valley of the Suplex, and member of the Valley Sports Plug Network, Nico. What's going on, boys?
Gentlemen, how we doing? Chris, Nico, the holidays are upon us. We already got one big dub in Arizona as ASU wins the Big 12 championship. I think some of us are still in shock, but we got some awesome special guests to break it down. But Nico, how you doing, my brother?
Oh, man, I am living it the best I can be at these times. I cannot lie. It is a good time to be a Sun Devil fan, and watching them absolutely dog walk Iowa State was a pleasure. But yeah, I'm feeling good, boys. Let's get to it.
Hell yeah. Very excited. Plenty to talk about. We're going to be getting into, obviously, ASU's big win in the Big 12 championship. And now they advance to the college football playoff. They're going to have a few weeks off. The Arizona Cardinals are in a straight nosedive. They've lost three straight. Two of those three losses were to the Seattle Seahawks. Phoenix Suns, also not doing very good. They've been consistently injured early and are struggling. And then, you know, as these roundtables go, we'll just kind of chat about whatever topic comes to light. So if you're in the chat, go ahead and let us know. You can chime in. Maybe we'll throw your comment on screen. Maybe we'll bring you in on the discussion and to some extent there. But also, while you're here, especially if this is your first time, make sure you do the YouTube thing, like and subscribe, ring the notification bell so you can know when we're going live like we are right now. All of our live streams are available for playback right away. So if you see us live, but you can't watch us right away, just remember tomorrow when you're at work, you can hop in and you can check it out. Hey, if you're not on YouTube all the time, you can also follow us across all social media platforms. That's Instagram, X, TikTok, Twitter is X. But you know what I'm saying. Basically, Google search Valley Sports Plug and you'll find us. And that's at AZ_VSP. Whew. Thank you, Garrett, for liking and subscribing. Very much appreciated. Well, why don't we go ahead, like Nico said, go ahead, get into this right now, bring in our special guests. I'm not going to say they're a package deal necessarily, but I'm just going to go ahead and bring them in. You know them, you love them. We're talking ASU, so you know we had to bring in the brothers Miller. What's going on, boys?
Happy to be here as always. And listen, if our parents got it right, they would have stopped with him. Instead, they had to do three more tries.
I'm already taking shots. We are minutes in, and he's going. So you know it's going to be a good one.
You know, and by that logic, that means that Colin's the best of us.
And it's true.
You know, keep trying until it works out, and then you get Colin. So, hey, what are you going to do? Hey, maybe one day if he's up for it, we'll have to bring him in on here, and we can have the full Thanksgiving table experience, as you've once described it.
Pure chaos.
You know, we don't have a beer dye table set up, so I don't know if Colin will join.
I mean, you gotta tell him there's one, and then just kind of like, dang, oh well. But when we do these roundtables, anyone who's tuned in before knows that it's not necessarily a structured thing. I'll kind of sit here and pose questions from time to time. But recently, we're trying to update our format a little bit and make this just a little bit more conversational. So guys are going to be jumping in, and we're just going to be having fun on this conversation. So let's go ahead, get into it first. I see, Ben, you're there wearing the Big 12 football championship shirt. You were in attendance on Saturday, weren't you?
Yes. By the grace of the brothers Miller, I was secured tickets for the Big 12 championship game here in Dallas, Texas at Jerry World. And let me tell you, it was absolutely electric to watch the Sun Devils just dog walk those Cyclones. And let me tell you, I have never in my entire life seen ASU travel like this. And this photo doesn't even do it justice. We had a alumni pregame and just took over Texas Live right there next to the stadium. It was fantastic. We had the owner of Santan Ford come in and buy an open bar for all Sun Devil fans, and it was just phenomenal. So go and buy your next car from Santan Ford, like and subscribe them. But it was truly electric to see it, and a once in a lifetime experience.
Ben still has all of his eligibility, so he's trying to get that sweet, sweet NIL money right now.
Listen, if I need to learn how to kick, I'm more than happy to put myself back in the ring.
Can we, speaking of kickers, I think this is late breaking news that Kenny has named a redshirt freshman as the starter for starting kicker for the game. And when it does happen here in a couple weeks, and it is a, we all have something in common with him. It is a Corona del Sol alum.
Let's go.
Really? Is it Karsten Kiefer here?
Kiefer. So yeah, shout out to our fellow Aztec, keeping us proud.
Let's go, man. There's something.
The other Kiefers?
What other Kiefers?
There's a big family of Kiefers from Corona.
Oh, then probably, right? It just seems like there's something in the water in Tempe, or I don't know, man. There's a lot of talent that's come out of there, or at least gone through there. Like, I know a lot of guys were like 1 year and they kind of dip out, but that's pretty cool. So you said he's a redshirt freshman?
I believe so, yeah. So I mean, the kicking can't get much worse, so the bar's set for him, but yeah, gonna be excited to have, you know, like an even more local tie when we watch whoever we're playing,
you know. But that brings up something I want to talk about around ASU football, and that is the improvement every single game at every single position that we have seen throughout this year. Yes, we dropped one against Texas Tech in our Big 12 opener. Yes, we without our starting quarterback, we lost at Cincinnati. But every single game, every position has just gotten more and more electric. And this is one of the best things about this team overall, is that they just don't stop and they're improving. And that's what Kenny has been saying at every single point since he got to ASU. We are going to be the best at what we do every single day and get better at it. And so that's something that is like a culture shift, and that is really exciting to see.
Are we not a little worried, though, that we're going to have a big break here with, you know, our first game coming on January 1st? That's a lot of time off for a team that's been – I personally, like, that 5 seed seemed like the best seed in the entire bracket. So, like, I don't know. I'm a little concerned coming up with the fact that we got a whole month to kind of sit on our hands and figure it out.
It's the classic rust versus rest. You know, like, which one would you rather have? I mean, we see this in basketball all the time where teams, they've already been locked into their playoff position with 3 or 4 games to go. They sit the starters, and then they have a hard time getting out in the first round. So, no, I think Nico's right. It's a real concern. ASU's never been here before. You know, we've never even done this thing before, so we really don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, I think when you're playing this hot, you know, like the last 5 games, okay, you know, Levitt's been slinging the ball. He's had a quarterback rating of over 90. You've got Scat running all over the place. Like last three games, almost 500 yards, 8 touchdowns. Like, so they're moving the ball well. Defense is doing its thing. Yeah, I kind of would have liked that 5 spot. But, I mean, every game at this point, you're going to be playing against, like, some of the blue bloods of college football. So it's going to be contentious. And I think having one less game, you know, like you only have to win 3 now at this point, I'll take the rest.
You know, we've talked about it before, is that we're playing with house's money at this point. But I think that looking at it, there is no way that we are not going to be well rested and ready. We're already appealing one of our best defensive players at the end of the fourth quarter in the championship game for the Big 12. There was a targeting call on, I forget which player, but I think it's one of our edge rushers. And it's kind of a questionable call because the QB, it was going to be a clean hit, but then he at the last second put his helmet down and caused that helmet-to-helmet contact. So that's being appealed. We'll hear more about that in the next few days and weeks leading up to the game, if he'll be activated for that Peach Bowl game.
Yeah, no, I remember seeing that. Mike and Nico and I were while watching this game down at the casino, and I think it was helmet to helmet, but I agree, like, it was kind of like, you know, when you're watching it in slow motion, it's like, oh, that's egregious, but when you watch it in real time, it's like bang bang, like you can't really make those quick adjustments as you think you can when you're watching in slow-mo. Like, everybody's an armchair quarterback. Everybody knows football better than the next person. But do think it's interesting. Like, I wonder how frequently the appeals actually are successful in these sort of things, especially in this day of taking player safety very seriously. So, I mean, shit, Nico, how big of an impact is him potentially missing the first half going to be?
I mean, I think it's going to suck. For me, when I watched this live, I was like, yeah, that's a penalty for sure. Just in today's day and age, like that, they're not going to play with that one. And then I watched Texas and Georgia, and there was a hit in that game where it was very similar, and they let that call like slide. And, you know, everybody was like, wow, really glad they let that call slide. Meanwhile, the same exact situation is happening for ASU, and everybody, you know, I don't know. I feel just slightly disrespected by the media lately as an ASU fan. I feel like every chance that the media has had to shit on us, they took, even putting U of A's logo up on Sam Acho's board. Unbelievable.
I was going to say, we know, okay, so they're going to be rested, but Kenny's also going to have them hyped, and they already have that material, like the chip on the shoulder. I don't know if you guys can pull it up, but like, I'm dying to know, how do you get this wrong? Like, there's the logos couldn't be more different. Like, did they just search Arizona A and then poof, like throw it on national television?
There it is. Mike's quicker than me.
It's so criminal. It's so bad.
And what stands out to me obviously is U of A there. Oh man, it doesn't show they call it the dangerous tier above that.
I can grab that. Give me one second.
Yeah, see if you have that.
This is actually a pretty interesting way to sort the teams, because I don't know if I really would have agreed with who they consider contenders versus Cinderellas. I mean, at this point, you're down to 12. Everyone is pretty dangerous, and everyone has their flaws. And I think we'll get into that here in a bit as we kind of go team by team through the bracket.
The worst part about this whole butchering of the logo thing was Sam Acho obviously wasn't briefed on this before. He looked down and went, he did a visible double take, and then went, oh, we didn't even know who was coming out of the Big 12. We just have Arizona's logo. And it's like, he's like, this should be a pitchfork. And I was like, this is so, like, ESPN is the worldwide leader in sports.
And hey, I got to give credit to Acho, though. That's live TV at its best. Like, you just kind of roll with it. Cameras are going.
For sure. I don't know. There is a lot. I mean, this, you have they ranked the top 52 college football playoff teams, and ASU was 52 out of 52. Kenny's going to post that on the bulletin board. Like, I'm here for this. Give me all this bulletin board material.
Is that like all-time college football playoffs? Or
yeah, like since the college football playoffs started.
Oh, okay.
So they have us the worst. But like, first of all, the field just expanded to 12.
Yeah.
So it was the top four teams in the country every year. And that list was like Georgia, Clemson, Alabama, fucking insert team random here, Michigan or whatever.
Did they include like number one LSU 2019 and like with the years next to them too? And it's like, what was the context there?
I honestly, all I heard was on the radio, that's what they were talking about, was this article that came out that ASU was 52 out of 52. And I was like, wow, okay.
But you know what? Yeah, fill up the bulletin board. Like, they've been counted out all season and look where they're at. So, I mean, here, I was sitting on this show here 4 months ago mocking Ben openly about just how bad this season was going to be. I thought 3 wins was aggressively optimistic. So yeah, no, I ate crow last time around. Okay. I jumped on the bandwagon formally. So we're not going to rehash that, Ben. Like, you were right, but no, I love it. Like, I want to see that East Coast SEC bias, because you know it's coming.
Exactly. And I think that, like, even looking at the playoff odds, like, for the Peach Bowl and the two look-ahead ones for our matchups, either Clemson or Texas, the Arizona Republic has Arizona State versus Clemson, Clemson minus 4.5. ASU versus Texas, Texas minus 11.5. At every single game that we have come into, that has been a ranked matchup, minus the BYU game where it was like minus 2 or 3 ASU, We have been the underdogs. We've been the underdogs all season. We are ready. This is a team that will fight through, and that they are going to make their opponents, especially a shaky Clemson team that's just happy to be there, or a Texas team that is going to be resting on their laurels and having played literally no one and gotten dog walked by them dogs twice. This is going to be a fun matchup either way.
I think go for it, Steve. You got it.
Okay, I was going to say, I think that's a good cue. Ben, I want to know, and Nico too, like, of these two teams, who do we match up better against?
Clemson.
I think the answer is Clemson. Now, which one in the storyline of ASU season do I think that we have a better chance of just coming in and come on, that's just disrespect. Oh, I thought of, never mind. Will it just be a perfect like next chapter on this season is if we beat Texas?
I'm gonna deliver the first hot take of today's episode and say I want Texas. I think there is a chance here that ASU could actually knock off this dominant Texas team that, I mean, they came into the preseason number 4 ranked overall. They have only lost to Georgia. They played them twice. There's their two losses. But, you know, I think it's going to be, it's like the classic unstoppable force, immovable object situation where their pass D and their run D are both the best in the SEC. So they would give Leavitt and Scat like the biggest test that they've had all season. But Ewers is hurt. He's been battling injury all year. Arch Manning, if they decide to throw him in, he hasn't necessarily played lights out. He's still got a long ways to go. And Ewers, when he's healthy, he's turnover prone. And this ASU team has shown that they can win the turnover battle. And that's been the deciding factor in a lot of these games that they weren't supposed to win. So I think if they can get inside Ewers' head, and, you know, they would need that edge because they're going to need to cause pressure. But I think I like our chances against Texas. I don't know if I want to play the other Cinderella. You know, like Clemson, it's weird that we've got Clemson being a Cinderella. Like, you've won 2 national championships in the last 10 years, and people are like, oh my God, I can't believe they made it. Like, okay. But I think, like, that would be, they have the mojo, you know, that, like, that we also have right now. And if I've learned anything watching March Madness, like, you don't really want, as a hot team, to play another hot team.
Exactly. And I think that with that too, this is why being in that 4 seed was so important to us. Because if we were in that 5th seed, do you know where we would be playing in 2 weeks? Happy Valley. Do you know what temperature is going to be in central Pennsylvania in 2 weeks? 15 degrees. It is not a dome stadium. That would be outside. The Sun Devil team, they need to be playing either outdoors, south of Mason-Dixon, or playing in a dome.
Yeah, that's always like a number one concern for me with any football team from the state of Arizona is how are they going to travel to colder climates? So, I mean, Ben nailed it, absolutely dodged a bullet. Steven, that is a spicy take. I will say I was literally in the pre-show prep, if you want to call it, back in the green room. I was telling the story of a coworker of mine said that he would rather have Texas, and I insinuated that I thought that was a crazy proposition, and Steven goes, just wait. But I mean, look, I get what you're saying though about them kind of having that Cinderella momentum as well. They're coming off their last game of the season against SMU. They beat them 34-31. SMU, as everyone knows, is also a playoff team right now. They did lose to 15 South Carolina, and their only other loss was to number 1 Georgia at the beginning of the season. But I mean, looking at their schedule, they really didn't play anybody. They also lost to Louisville 33-21. So I get the hot streak thing, but now they're also going to have some time off. Of course, they're going to play Saturday, but then they'll go a week and a half. So I don't know. I think, Mike, I want to get you looped in here. We're 20 minutes in. You haven't said shit since the intro. I know we let the Baylor boys do their thing, but I just It reminds me almost of the conversation we had with Tallman on the last Heat Check podcast, talking about the Arizona Cardinals coming off the bye week and whether they were going to be, you know, rusty or rested, like we were saying. And we were optimistic, said they were going to be well rested, ready to go. And what have they done since? Taken a big fat shit on the doorstep. So, I mean, your level of concern for that?
Like you said, obviously that's the first thing that we've seen right in front of our faces. Three straight weeks of terrible football from the Arizona Cardinals. But I think one thing for ASU that gives me confidence, gentlemen, is how confident Kenny Dillingham and Cam Scatterboo have been, man. If you really just think Cam is hitting the Heisman post three different times in that Big 12 championship game, 200 all-purpose yards, three touchdowns, I'm kind of in the same camp with Steven. Bring on the big dogs and see what this guy can do, because he wants it, man. And Kenny has been talking about, I think he just went on Arizona Sports as well, had a little sit-down 30-minute conversation. And the narrative around ASU is just really in an absolute positive light. Kenny's calling guys in the transfer portal and they're saying, oh my God, I thank you. I've been waiting for this phone call. These guys are juiced. So I don't think any amount of time off right now is really going to sway what their overall goal is, right? And if you really think about where this program was just 2-3 years ago, you know, talking about restrictions, bowl bans, this, that, and the other from what Herm Edwards bullshit did to Arizona State. I mean, the Cinderella story is really in front of you. And I don't know if any kind of momentum can really take them off of this train right now, either than some pro ready guys. But if you really think about it, Cam Scatterboo, he is the best running back in the country. I don't care about the Boise State kid, man. This guy is something different, and he's ready to prove it and continue to boost his draft stock as well. So I'm going to expect a big game out of him. The last thing I'll say, too, I know a lot of people have been worried about, you know, well, what does Sam Levitt look like without Jordan Tyson? I mean, you see Guillory only has two catches, but they're two touchdowns. So guys are making impacts when they need to and stepping up. That's how ASU has got to where they are so far. So confidence is key, Chris. Remember what Ben said? He never wavered. You shouldn't either.
We are unwavered in all of this. And I think that brings up like a really good point too about just how Kenny is truly the face of this next generation of college coaches, especially with the transfer portal opening up this week. And this saying to his guys, like, if you want to go, if you are down in the depth chart, you're not getting enough playing time, you're not getting enough NIL money, yeah, you can stay with the team through this run. You are the guys who helped us get us here, but go enter your name in the portal, go and see what's out there. There is no fault on the players for making the best choice for themselves, and I think that's the right choice to take, especially when you compare it to other schools bringing back a dinosaur like Bill Belichick to have a pro style college program. And we all know what a pro style college program looked like at ASU just 3 years ago.
Yeah, it seems like it never works, right? Like the pro style offense in college, or the college style offense in the pros. Like the inverse, I guess, would be like Chip Kelly going to coach after his success at Oregon and just fizzling out. And yeah, dinosaur is a perfect way to describe Bill Belichick. But I think the idea is that his girlfriend will help him with recruiting. He'll take her along on trips. And
he's already in touch with those young kids. Yeah, perfect. He's had some work on it.
Am I the only one that's crazy to think that Belichick and Chapel Hill might actually work?
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe I am. I'm going to stand here on wax live on this podcast and say that Bill Belichick in Chapel Hill with that North Carolina program is going to pay off. They told him $20 million in NIL right off the bat. He's brought in Michael Lombardi, who is his GM in New England all those years. I mean, I don't know. I think he might have a shot. I do think it's very funny, and it is very odd that it's – oh, no. And it's very odd that it's North Carolina, but I also heard that his dad is the reason why he wanted to coach in North Carolina, because his dad was an assistant coach up there before he coached 50 years at Army. But Yeah, no, I don't know. I'll stand on it right now. When all the hate's pouring down, I think Belichick might actually he's going to turn that program around.
First off, okay, I have two. I appreciate Nico. I did not want to be the only hot take tonight, so I appreciate you jumping on there with that. Having been a diehard Kansas fan, I've watched when a basketball school tries to make the leap and become a two-sport school, and it doesn't work. You know, the last time when Kansas was making, I think, an Orange Bowl run, you know, like they had all the preseason hype this year, and that didn't obviously go very well. But the last time they made a serious bowl game, I mean, you had football players and basketball players fighting over girls on campus. Like, it was chaos. And I just don't think, like, a college campus is big enough for two nationally successful programs. There's just way too much ego. So I think it's a powder keg. It's a recipe for disaster. That's always going to be a basketball campus. And you can bring in as many dinosaurs as you want, but you're not going to be able to get away from the legends that have gone through that program. The other thing is, I don't even think Belichick is going to coach a single game for UNC, because we've already seen what he did back in 2000 when he took that Jets job and then 3 days later turned around and took the Patriots job and left them at the altar. I think the Saints are going to come calling, and I think he'll be in New Orleans by the time next season starts. What are we even doing here?
What another hot take, Stephen Miller. Holy cow.
Also, wait, I have something to say around that. You're telling us that a playoff contender, Arizona State football, while also having a men's basketball team that is receiving top 25 votes, they're number 27 right now. Are you saying we can't do both? We can't have good things, especially after this year, coming off of a national championship in swim and dive? Come on. Ben, we're in everything school. The sleeping giant is waking up. Open your eyes.
I have to just let everyone know that the running joke in our family every year, every ASU season, is what Ben always says: sleeping giant. Like, we are the next Alabama. We are the next Ohio State. We have the resources. We just need to get the pieces together. And yeah, so if the sleeping giant has really woken up, I'm going to have years worth of Thanksgiving dinners where I'm going to have to sit there and apologize. So I don't think that the hype is real. I don't think we're national contenders in both sports yet. I always have said, though, that look, ASU should be leading in transfer portal recruiting, because there is nothing like Tempe in the winter. And as soon as that portal opens up, the first thing that these coaches should be going out and doing is taking pictures of Palm Walk. And you know, I was thrilled to see Kenny do exactly that. In his interviews, he's sitting there, he's talking to the kids who are in Pennsylvania and Ohio right now, and they just played in the cold and they're miserable, and he's reminding them, hey guys, come out here, it's great. So he's doing a lot of right things. And you know, and hey, I gotta give Bobby, I'm rocking my ASU, you know, I gotta give Bobby credit too. Like, team looks solid.
Well, and that's also true, because Kenny just went on the number one sports podcast, that's not this one, in the world, pardon my take, and did that exact same pitch, saying, have you seen Palm Walk? It is 75 degrees here in the middle of December. What are you guys doing? Where else do you want to be?
If only Game Day would listen to him and actually show up every once in a while.
Well, I think that ESPN has enough problems with ASU being good at anything. Shouting out to Dez Howard, and then also this most recent snafu with the logos.
Honestly, if it wasn't for Pat McAfee being on ESPN for an hour, I don't think ASU would get any love. I think he might be the only one in the media that's like, yeah, let Kenny and the boys cook. And I think Kenny was on Pat's show talking about the exact, you know, he's saying it's 65 and it's sunny, right? There's blue skies. Why wouldn't you want to be here? It's such a great pitch that I'm surprised has not been used before.
I mean, what do they always say? You can't shovel sunshine, right? I mean, there are so many things that are in ASU's favor for recruiting? I mean, I think of on the football side, obviously the weather is somewhat of a factor for sure, but I mean, look at what they're doing right now. That being in the Big 12 championship, winning the Big 12 championship is great for recruiting. Seeing how Kenny Dillingham coaches, how the players are responding to him. I mean, having Hines Ward as your wide receivers coach, I think for me, and maybe wishful thinking, but optimistically, this is just the tip of the iceberg. Like this is really just getting started. This was Kenny Dillingham's second season at ASU. So, and what he's, Steven, he's like your guy, you're Mike's age, right? He's mid 30s, something like that.
He's a year younger than us.
He's 34.
Dude, Kenny could be coaching here for a long time. Long time.
Hey, Steven, I'm still 34. Don't lump me in with you just yet, man.
Okay. So sorry.
And he's going to get a nice little payday too. Weren't they already saying that the contract negotiations are starting? So, I mean, well-deserved, obviously, but it's awesome to see somebody who is invested. Obviously, it's their alma mater, so you kind of have that different type of investment than other guys, but I did see, hold on, Colin asked a question. I wonder if you guys know this. Do we know how many ASU players are in the transfer portal right now?
I was looking at a tracker earlier today, and I think it is around, it's not that many. It's only like, 5 to 6 players are in the transfer portal. Now that's changing maybe, like that's changing every minute, every hour, but that is no one that is a consistent starter. These are all guys that are down the depth chart. And that's the main thing. Kenny's handling that the right way.
So looks like, according to Arizona Sports, it's 10 right now. And I'm quickly trying to browse this article, but it looks like the interest we are receiving from incoming players far outweighs the number of guys that are on their way out. So, and this is, I mean, this is just college sports now. Like, you have the revolving door. You have to be ready for a couple guys to leave, and you got to be recruiting every year. Hitting the JUCO circuit and looking at who's at those blue bloods, who isn't getting the starting spot that they may have been promised, or isn't getting that NIL deal. Because a lot of schools still haven't figured out the NIL formula. They don't have Santan Ford out there, throwing money around. So. I think ASU's relatively speaking in a pretty good spot, and I think we're going to see some big names end up on that team next year to replace any of the outgoing talent.
Well, I do want to talk about one main guy who it was in the news as well. Ben and Steven, I need to know what your thoughts are about this. And it's a guy who seems like is probably sticking around in Sam Levitt, with him giving 100% of his royalties to support the ASU NIL initiatives. I mean, how cool is that, man? Like, that just embodies somebody who is here and ready to support not only his teammates, but what the culture and what they're trying to build here at ASU, right? Like, awesome.
Well, and that's what Kenny's been saying. He is Bo Nix 2.0. And that is just, he is, with Kenny's work that he did with Bo in Auburn and then at Oregon, Kenny's the reason that Bo even transferred to Oregon in the first place too. So seeing this, him being a true offensive mind and a quarterback developer, seeing him like get someone as a redshirt freshman and just watch the improvement that Sam's had game over game this year, he's going to be one of the top rated QBs in the country in the next several years.
I agree. And you know, Levitt has gotten some serious cash. I don't think that they publish these numbers. I don't think the collective really wants people to know how much money is actually going to the players. But Levitt's doing Circle K commercials on Instagram. So, like, he's actually getting some of the bigger opportunities here in town. So, that's really cool. And I think it all comes, you know, it's like football is such a top-down culture. And he definitely saw what Kenny did with paying the assistants. Kenny got that huge bonus, and he gave it to like the non-game day staff, like the people who are most often overlooked in a program. I mean, you talk about a class act, like that kind of shit, that it definitely carries on. And that's the culture that Kenny's established. Like, the guys want to support each other, and it's awesome to see.
And that's why, honestly, we're in a situation where our influx of players coming through the portal is the way that it is versus the amount of players that are actually leaving our portal. So I don't know. It's, for me, it's nice to see that people actually want to be here, because a lot like, you know, North Carolina, we want to be a football school. Everybody in the Valley wants to have a football school. We love ASU football, and the Valley eats up good football when good football is being played. Look at how the Cardinals are embraced when the Cardinals are playing good ball. When ASU has gone on their runs in the past with Andrew Walter and all those types of guys, like the Valley embraces them. It's nice to feel like football is exciting in Tempe again.
But that brings up an even wilder take that I have right now, is the Valley also loves nothing more than a villain, than us being the villains. We saw Suns in 4. We loved Dennis Erickson's rough team that was literally having people carted off the field. We love the Valley and our sports teams just being the heel at every single moment. Is Kenny and is this team being just nice stand-up guys and good human beings? Is this a liability for us moving into the future?
Get that out of here, Ben. No.
Yeah, no way. On us. No way. There's enough edge on this football team anyways. I mean, like, Kenny is very relatable, because he seems like when somebody shits in his coffee, he gets upset about it and then finds a calculated way to find some sort of retribution. He doesn't seem like a you know, curse and scream in your face guy, but he'll sneaky get his payback. So I don't know. I think that there's an edge. I do think that having a softer image may not be a bad thing for the Valley right now.
Embrace Cinderella, Ben. We don't need villains.
I'm just asking questions here.
Nobody likes the just asking questions guy. Come on. That's usually my job. I don't necessarily disagree, Ben. I know there is often times where Arizona sports teams are the villain, but I feel like more often than not, we are in this Cinderella position. I mean, Arizona sports is just constantly underreported on, undercovered. Like, Mike and I have had so many conversations about the national media talking about the Arizona Cardinals and just having absolutely no idea. I think Stephen A. Smith was talking about, like, oh, their tight end's been terrible, and he named one of our tight ends who hadn't been on the roster for like 2 years. It's just, we're constantly underestimated. That's the word I was looking for. Just constantly underestimated. And I think in this particular instance with ASU, Kenny's going to be able to use that in a way to motivate this team. And I'm curious. I mean, I know, obviously, I don't want to keep talking in circles, the concerns of the time off and the difficult teams and the road ahead of us, but it seems like these guys are locked in, and you got some good leaders on this team too. And Camp Scataboo, you all right, Ben?
Oh, I am fine. But I was just going to, I think part of that reason that we love a heel so much is that the success for any ASU or any Arizona franchise has been so fleeting, where we are that Cinderella. And at the moment that we are able to punch up and to start being like, yeah, no, we got this. We're going to ruin your season. We're going to ruin your day. We're here. We want that bravado. But this team has been doing it the right way. They've been showing that bravado at every single point because they have that chip on their shoulder, and they're doing it in the classiest way possible.
You love to see it. You love to see it. But in the spirit of talking about Cinderella stories and possibly a failed Cinderella story, the Arizona Cardinals, just about a month ago, were at the top of the division in the NFC West, and other teams were struggling. The 49ers were banged up. Rams haven't been doing so good. Seattle is not a good football team. They've been overachieving. And so the conversation started swirling. Could the Arizona Cardinals run the rest of the season well enough and win enough games to make it into the playoffs as the winner of that division? Because as looking at the standings, if I'm not mistaken, that's going to be the only path. I don't think there's going to be a wild card team coming out of the NFC West. But as we've seen and we talked about at the top, or I guess briefly mentioned, they've lost three straight. Two of those were to the Seattle Seahawks. One was to Minnesota in Minnesota. Mike, what an absolutely unmitigated disaster.
Oh, gentlemen, hasn't been great. to say the least. You know, the last time we sat down for a Heat Check podcast, me, Chris, and Tallman had a lot of high hopes. We talked about guys who had been overachieving. This team, as in general, had been overachieving, right? But then you really have to sit back and think about who the Arizona Cardinals beat. And it was the middle to the bottom tier teams in the NFL. And what has happened within our losses? It's all to playoff teams. It's all to the teams that are controlling their own destiny. But it was awesome to be in a situation where we had that for once, right? You come out, you win, you go 5-2 for the rest of the season. You're in the driver's seat of the NFC West. And unfortunately, it seemed like all these guys stayed on by after week 11 and just haven't come back. We can talk plenty about Kyler Murray and how he's struggled since the bye. Obviously, 5 interceptions in 3 games. I think they've only had 3 touchdown drives as well. And the defense is starting to take another step back. You know, where's our guy? Where's our huge trade deadline move in Baron Browning? Oh, nowhere to be found, guys. Who would have guessed? The guy who didn't have a stat doesn't have any stats right now. So it's been a disaster. And it's unfortunately, now we're sitting here having to hope for other people to control our destiny. And for this to happen within less than a month is just an absolute far cry. But I know we got a lot of people on this panel, so I want to know what you guys think. But I don't give a shit about where your expectations were going into this season, coming off of 2 back-to-back 4-win seasons. You had control. You had control of the NFC West, and you had the real weak part of your schedule upcoming, and you come out and you lay an egg. What's new? It's just disappointing.
Same old cards. I mean, they lull us into this sense of hope, and then they do what they always do. Every year, so Defector, Drew McGarry over at Defector, an ex-Deadspin guy, he does the Why Your Team Sucks series. And it's all of the fans. You're only allowed to write in about your team. And you write in and it's just, you bash your own team, you know, and you make fun of yourself for being a fan. You wonder why, you know, it is that they've never won the big one or whatever. And it's a very cathartic experience. I do it every year for the Cards. And this year, my contribution, it was a simple one-liner. It was, I wish Salt Lake City would have taken this godforsaken team instead.
You know, you say that, but my personal favorite of yours, because I have the last 3 years of this article up, and Steven's appearance is every single year, is from 2022. Phoenix will run out of water before the Cardinals see another NFC championship game. And Santonio Holmes was out of bounds.
Thank you. I knew there was a second part of that, but... it's my favorite. It's my favorite part of every Cardinals season, right before it actually gets started and the pain begins. But no, like all jokes aside with this team, my big question is, where are the receiving touchdowns? Like, how does Trey McBride lead your team in yardage, but not have a receiving touchdown yet? Like, that's, to me, that's just a broken offense. Like your tight end should be one of your main targets in the red zone. And if you're not getting him the ball, then what are we doing here? Like, Harrison has been the only kind of bright shining light, which we all knew was going to happen. He was pro ready when he started. But yeah, thank you. Still
clearly both in bounds, right?
Get that still, shit off.
Clearly,
the screen.
Clearly both those are down.
We can't even see it. The picture's not even showing the complete bottom of his toes there, Chris.
Putting a fucking toe on top of another toe does not indicate 2 feet in bounds.
Okay, here we go.
That's a foot on a foot. Suck my left nut.
If you stop at that frame to be selectively, you know, picked, cherry picked, that's fine, Nico. We can do that.
Chris, I thought you were a Cardinals fan.
One AFC team, one NFC team. You know?
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
No, I don't have to be a fan to be truthful about what I'm seeing on my screen. You know, like,
listen, I have questions about whether he had possession overall.
Nico, is that foot on top of the other foot right there?
It damn sure is.
It's oh, please. That's it's halfway buried. That's almost to China. That toe is so far in the ground.
Look, all I know is that Aaron Francisco's wife is an absolute G for hanging that play up in the living room.
Wow, that's insane. I did not know that.
Yeah, she hung it up in the living room and basically said, don't make a mockery of our family again.
That's pain. Wait, at all times.
Who did that?
Aaron Francisco, the safety on that play. Yeah. He's the other safety.
He's the safety who pushed him out because he was too late.
That's savage. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, that good for her. She is absolute G of the year every year in my eyes. Dude, this football team is so pathetic though. Like I am going to jump on this because I love an opportunity to cry about the Cardinals. Like, man, at one point I got this team like tattooed on my arm. I legitimately like have a Cardinals like tattoo on my arm. Now I have to like reconsider every year, do I need to get this laser removed? Because like it's fucking embarrassing to watch this football team. This was a must-win game against a Seattle team that, quite frankly, is the worst Seattle team that has probably been out in years. No offense to Geno Smith, but like that, I couldn't even tell you their head coach's name. And I watch football every Sunday, and I watch ESPN every single day. This for me was such a gut punch. And I notoriously text Mike every Sunday and be like, "Oh, it's a big fuck my life chat," where we commiserate about how poorly run of an organization this is. It's absolute trash. I'm so upset. Sell the fucking team, Bidwill. It's fucking bullshit.
And it's funny how those texts have gotten shorter and shorter as the weeks have gone on this season, right, Nico? For 4 weeks, we were talking about, hey, it's awesome to see Marvin and Trey both 100-yard days over in Miami. You know, it seems like they're getting some more camaraderie. James Conner, another 100-yard day on the ground. Amari DiMercato, you know, putting his foot on the throats of Chicago Bears fans, as there were 80% of them, you know, absolutely taking over State Farm Stadium. And as these past 3 weeks have gone on, those texts have gotten shorter and shorter until the point, I think, Nico, I think I just texted you after you texted me. I said, fuck this team. Like, they continue to do it to us every single year. And I'm going to go back to it because in the grand scheme of things, yes, gentlemen, we've been dog water for 2 years, right? You see the light at the end of the tunnel, but you have to truly think about the investments were not made for this team to win the NFC West this year. Like, you think about the free agent signings, the lack of any kind of edge rush that was brought in. And then you think about, you know, the defensive line with Bilal Nichols and who's the other guy? But we're losing all these guys on the front end who were supposed to be guys who were consistent for us this entire year, and we lose them early. And then you see that this team is in a prime position to win the NFC West, and you bring in a guy in Baron Browning who doesn't have a stat and still does not have stats, cannot win one-on-one pass rush matchups. Like, I know that I still have trust in what Monty Austin-Fort and what Jonathan Gannon are trying to do. It's just hard to sit there because we know how this is a week-to-week league and how things can, like, really change so quickly. And we've talked about in the past as well how things can change year to year, where teams can go from worst to first. And you're thinking about, this is finally the opportunity for the Arizona Cardinals to do that. And they didn't invest in themselves. Like, well, it's truly still not the part of the plan. Like, it'll be cool if we can get it done, but let's just sit back and hope that Kyler Murray is ready to be the guy. And in year six, it doesn't seem like he is now yet. But like I'm all over the place. Yes, I close my rings because this team gives me a damn heart attack every Sunday now, and it's becoming unbearable once again. And Nico, I mean, we've done this for years and years. So,
where's our aging all pro that's gonna retire and do the twilight of his year? Like, where's this season's JJ Watt? Like, I'm surprised they didn't make a pitch to Von Miller, you know? Like,
you know, and that is a take that Steven initiated his appearances on Why Your Team Sucks in 2021. When you make a Pro Bowl, you guarantee yourself a lucrative Cardinals contract 7 years down the line.
It's like clockwork.
It's a day late and a dollar short. That's so true. Like,
well, but hold on, Ben. Unless you play for the Arizona Cardinals and you make six Pro Bowls, then let's think about sending you away.
Then you head east. Yeah.
See ya. And how many NFC championships have we had since 2008?
A big old goose egg.
None.
Yeah. Yep.
Real quick before the moment passes, wanted to watch with you guys this quick sketch. It kind of reminded me of the conversation Mike and Nico are having.
There we go. What's the team in blue, Dad? Chicago Bears. Oh, yeah, we might live in Green Bay some, but you're a Bears fan, all right?
I will be. They're awesome.
No. Don't pick the Bears, you idiot. Look at Rodgers, Jacob. Look at Rodgers. Look at how good he is. Pick the Packers. Pick the Packers.
You know what? I have something I want to give to you.
Don't do it, okay? Do not do it. No. Don't put that shirt on. No. God. Don't make me be a Bears fan, Jacob. Don't make me.
Oh, we're going to be good for a minute, son. I'm guessing 2-3 championships over the next 10 years.
Oh, they're not, you idiot. You don't know what's coming. The double doink.
Tragic.
Hey, that is one thing that does put things into perspective. My brother-in-law is a Bears fan. He's from Chicago. One of my other good buddies, Greg, he's a Bears fan too. He grew up there. He was telling me, I think, that the Chicago Bears have not won a football game on a Sunday since like 2021. So, you know,
that can't be real.
Now, I don't know. He was having some eggnog that was punched with something. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But I also would not be surprised, man. It's they're down in the dumps with us. So at least we beat them this year. Huh? Take that.
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll see what they do. It is somewhat comforting to know that there are other garbage poverty franchises out there with terrible ownership that – I think Ben, you're the one who said it, like Bidwell, or maybe it was Nico. Bidwell needs to sell the team straight up. Like, I get it's been in his family for generations now, but what are you doing, dude? Like, Mike, like, there's been no investment into the play. And like, this has got to be the longest rebuild of any football team I've ever seen in my entire fucking life.
Well, it's the old Raiders rule. Like, it's when all the family owns is the team, the last thing they're going to do is sell the team. Like Jerry, you know, he's got his side businesses, like all of the successful owners, all the teams that actually know how to win, like they can endure bad seasons because they've got other businesses throwing off money and they can continue to invest in free agents and all that. But like when you're the Raiders or the Cardinals and all that money is tied up in the team, you need the team to be good for that success to build on each other. So like, financially, you're in a hole. So yeah, I think after, you know, like Bidwell's grandfather got that team for like a couple magic beans back when it was in St. Louis, and they're never gonna sell. Like, we're stuck.
I mean, but I think someone needs to get in his ear and pitch like, hey, I mean, if you sell the team, probably make $1 billion or whatever, however much you can get. Go open a private bank. Go buy 100 Taco Bell franchises. Like, you have all this generational wealth now. You don't have to do nothing with it. Just don't be the owner of the Cardinals. Like, go buy an MLS team. Go buy a Korean baseball team. I don't care. But don't be the owner of the Cardinals anymore. But unfortunately, Steven, I think you're absolutely right. I don't think he has any intention of ever selling the team. And I think also what leads me to believe that is he's not a hands-off owner whatsoever. He very much wants to be all up in the day-to-day, as we saw on Hard Knocks.
And that's our problem, is that the guy does not have a lick of football sense, and yet he wants to be the Jerry Jones, like have his hands on everything. It's a disaster.
Steven, you also said that in 2018, that Michael Bidwell has less charisma than a wilted houseplant.
Yes.
Thank you, man. It's a trip down memory lane.
Oh, but isn't it just disgusting that, I mean, these same kind of conversations just go from year to year, time and time again. It just continues. I was hoping that we were on the other side of it with Michael Bidwell. It seemed like he truly has taken a step back, guys. It seems like he has, and he's letting Monty Austin Fort you know, handle business and make the moves and bring in the personnel that he wants. But Chris, going back to your conversation point when you talked about how this has been like the longest rebuild you've ever seen, I mean, technically it is just year two, right? But it rebuilds can happen so quick. And you thought that from how through 10 weeks of this season, you were ahead of schedule. And then to come back out, be reminded that we are in the rebuild, it's just, it's disappointing. Like you had an absolute awesome chance to set the best foot forward and get some of these guys playoff experience this year. And then you go out with $100 million in cap space and bring in two awesome edge rushers. You can re-sign Buda Baker to a nice contract. You go and get some young pieces because of what Monty Austin Ford has done within the draft. And then you're ready to strike next year. And now we got some of these guys that are probably looking at, you know, the head coach and specifically Drew Petzing on the offensive side saying, can we win with these guys as our leaders? Now, probably more so Drew Petzing than Jonathan Gannon. I think guys are really still bought in on what JG has been doing. But, you know, you could talk about how Marvin Harrison Jr. is just not up to the bill. How much of that is him and his own development? And how much of that is the bullshit calls that we're getting once again? I mean, I'll throw it out to you guys. You remember the last play on that fourth down in Minnesota and Kyler Murray's over here shaking his head like, what the fuck am I? I got to run four verts on a fourth and 10 with guys sitting back in coverage. Like, what are we doing? So there's when you lose, the finger pointing always goes out, right? And it's just upsetting to have been going into the bye where all the finger pointing was at, look at the good job that you guys have been doing. And now we're finger pointing at what's the reason why we've fallen apart once again.
Mike, is Kyler the answer here? Like, is Kyler the problem? How much longer do we need to do the Kyler experiment before we can definitively say, like, hey, maybe it's time to roll the dice and start over?
Go ahead, Chris. You want to start it off?
I just wanted to, because he did ask you the question, so I do want you to answer it. But I am so glad you brought this up, Steven, because it was literally in my notes here to bring up. Was going to segue it to wanting to know your opinion as well. So hopefully you'll share your two cents after Mike does. But Mike knows how I feel. The experiment's been over, Steven. It's been over for a while now.
I mean, gentlemen, you have to go off of literally what the tape has shown and what Kyler Murray has done in big games. And he's played in probably, I would say, three big games so far in his NFL career, right? Two of them were in 2021 in week 18 when all you had to do was beat the Seattle Seahawks who weren't playing for a damn thing and you win the NFC West and you have a home game for the first round of the playoffs. He wilted away and we lost an inexcusable game where the Seattle Seahawks had nothing to play for. Then you go into the playoffs that same year and get absolutely roasted by the eventual champions, the Los Angeles Rams, but he quits on his team. Colt McCoy has to come over and say, hey, you're supposed to be the leader, my guy. This is how you show up for your team, even when you're going through the tumultuous times. And then obviously we had the years where we were talking about the contract or the homework clause. And is he really built in? Is he really built to be a leader? And he's started to turn narratives from his offseason work after he tore his ACL. And he comes in last year with no expectations, plays good in some big games. And then the first time, once again, when he is completely healthy and you must have a win to continue to keep your chances and stay in the driver's seat. And Kyler Murray might have just cost the Arizona Cardinals the playoffs by his two interceptions last week. And his lack of ability to stretch the field and get guys involved in the deep throws. I don't give a fuck about the Michael Wilson 41-yard touchdown on Sunday, guys. That was an anomaly. It hasn't happened all year long. So long-winded answers, but Chris, you know me. I got to give my background context when I say it. I don't think Kyler Murray is the answer long-term for the Arizona Cardinals. But you know what is happening? He is going to be given the keys to the driver's seat next year. And if he doesn't get it done next year, they will move off of him. That's what I've been saying, and that's what I was saying before this season started.
When hasn't he had the keys to the driver's seat in the since he was drafted?
Well, there's always been secondary narratives where they've given him a mulligan. Basically, Ben
built-in excuses every year,
right?
Yeah,
like his hands are small, he's too short, he doesn't know how to throw the ball because he's an athletic QB who can run it. There have been excuses at every point, but he has been in control of this overall. He doesn't have enough work ethic. Like, you can find every single excuse for the subpar performance that he has had almost every season, except for when they also collapsed at the end of that 10-win season, based on that Green Bay Hail Mary.
Well, but you do have to think, though, first 3 years, everything was the trajectory upward, right? He wins the NFC Rookie of the Year. They win more games. Then they start 9-1. So everything was going moving forward. Then you come in the next season. You blame everything on Cliff Kingsbury. Everything goes down into the toilet, and we're focused on that. Then we fire him. He tears his ACL within that next season. He's out when you bring in a new coach. You give him that rest of the year as a grace period. And then this year you go in and basically say, this is supposed to be the next step within the trajectory, right? Because we still are in the rebuild, right? You are hoping that this team can get possibly double-digit wins this year. But then next season is supposed to be it. Next season is supposed to be when Kyler Murray takes this team to the promised land and gets multiple playoff wins. I thought we were talking about
the
Cardinals,
not the Cowboys, where this is the year.
But that's what I'm saying. So that's how it's been 6 years, and he just
every year
continues to be given a reason why it's okay for him to fall flat. But now I think we're done. We're done with it. But obviously the front office isn't going to give up on him next year. Because what are you going to do? You want to trade up and you want to bring in Cam Ward after you sign $100 million in free agents? No, this team is going to give a veteran the opportunity to see if he can get it done.
I think you're spot on. So, no, I agree. I'm the Kyler. If the moment you have to start defending your quarterback, I think you already know it's over, you know? And I think we hit that point a couple years ago. I know they had to give him that contract. I don't think they should have. You know, when you put him in the driver's seat, like, we're still not sure that he can reach the pedals. So, like, and this offense has sputtered, you know, like, under when he's been given that kind of control. If you're going to draft a weapon like Marvin Harrison Jr., you got to make the deep ball an important part of your offense. And I've watched way too many damn screen passes, to like a lifetime's worth of screen passes. I'm done with it. I think you absolutely need to get someone with an arm who can take a hit and play through a whole season. I do think something interesting that's happened this year outside of Arizona is that we've seen a new way to build a team. You no longer have to, like, for, you know, probably 10, 12 years, it was all about, okay, you got to get lucky in the draft and you got to build a team around a quarterback on a rookie deal while he's still on that rookie deal and you can pay everyone else. And now people are getting cheap quarterbacks, but they're getting them off the scrap heap that have been tossed aside by other teams. You've got Geno Smith playing well in Seattle. You've got Sam Darnold, the reemergence of Sam Darnold. Like, who could have seen that coming? You've got Baker Mayfield. You know, like, you've got guys who have found greener pastures who the first spot just wasn't a good fit for whatever reason. You know, the pressure got to them. Like, I would have loved to see the Cards get in on Daniel Jones. You know, and don't, like, that Giants team doesn't leave a lot to, like, covet after. But like, he, in my opinion, is that this year's, like, cast aside, you know, couldn't last. Like, Jared Goff, yeah, look, you know, like, there's I think a relatively long list toward the top of the NFL right now, if you look at, like, the QBR rankings, of quarterbacks who are, you know, they're not sexy playmakers with legs like Kyler has been, you know, in his past, but they're solid guys who protect the ball and get it down the field. And, you know, while we've got James Conner still here, you know, and he's healthy, I think we need to build just more of a vanilla traditional offense. And I don't think Kyler's the answer for that. I think let's get boring again.
Steven, you do bring up a really great point, right? What was the reason, another reason why you kept Kyler Murray around for so long? It was his ability to run the football, right? Get outside of the pocket, make throws on the run. And it just seems like that has been completely written out of the game script, especially over the past 3 weeks. And like you said, if you want to get vanilla with it and just, you know, set an I formation, run off the shoulder, off the guards, or you want to set in play action and just have a pocket quarterback, Kyler Murray's not the guy, guys. Like, he has an okay arm. He can make good throws, obviously. But if you're going to be a pocket passer, I don't care, man. Kyler Murray is 5'8". I can't have him sitting there trying to read NFL defenses over 6'8" offensive linemen. It does not work. And that can be, you guys can say that's a vanilla comment overall too, right? That's just like so, what, narrow-minded within it. But that's the truth. How many times have we seen Kyler Murray sit in the pocket and have balls batted down? Or him get too scared because the pressure comes through and he can't see his progressions. And then it's another sack. We're in 2nd and 18 and we're throwing a little screen pass to Amari DiMercato or just punting on drives after we take one sack. Like, he was supposed to be a mobile quarterback, and getting him into those positions makes him a better quarterback. And when you don't want to do that, don't keep him around as a pocket passer. Find somebody else who can do it. Find that 6'5 guy who can sit in there.
Yeah, without the mobility, this offense is just borderline unwatchable.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, it was that Washington Commanders game we were at. I think Kyler Murray only threw it further than 10 yards 3 times in the entire game. So it is death by 1,000 paper cuts, and those paper cuts are 2-yard screen passes and 3 and outs. I mean, it's brutal. It, like, Steven, you're right. It honestly is unwatchable. Mike, I want to go back like a little bit just to kind of like talk about like where I stand. Like, you're right, because we are 2 years into a rebuild under John Gannon, but it's like we've had 3 back-to-back rebuilds and we've built nothing in nearly 10 years. We have one winning season since 2015, and that was when we lost in the wild card playoffs to the Rams that you were talking about. Every other season has been either 8-8 or a losing season. So obviously the Steve Wilks experiment after Bruce Arians didn't work at all. Never liked that hiring. I feel like that was more out of lack of options more than anything else. Then you end up with Cliff and get Kyler Murray. I think that's when the rebuild, like the true rebuild, actually started. We can call the Steve Wilks year a throwaway, but I mean, you're looking at five years. This is the 5th season of the Kyler Murray experiment. Again, those built-in excuses. Last year, he only played in like, what, 8 games, if that. So sure. So either way, you have 4 years of a solid sample size of what Kyler Murray is and what he can and can't do. And what he can't do clearly is see over the offensive line and throw it downfield. And we are unfortunately having to beat that dead horse of calling Kyler Murray short and saying he's limited in being a pocket passer. But it's just because that's the case. And you're not going to tell me that my eyes are lying to me when I see him trying to scramble out and he can't see the guy 10 yards in front of him because there's a big burly 6'5" defensive back in his face, or not defensive back, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a problem. It's a problem. Now, Nico, welcome back. I want you to jump in on this Cardinals conversation. So I'll save my, my crazy, not a conspiracy, but I have an idea. I have an idea I want to share with you. But Nico, what are you thinking? Like, Kyler Murray experiment wise is what we were just talking about, whether it's time to cut the cord. What do we think they're going to do with them?
Guys, I've been on record multiple times on this podcast saying that I am a massive Kyler Murray supporter. This is the end of his tenure in the Valley, as far as I'm concerned. It sucks to be here, but we've spent, I believe we said earlier, it was 6 years. That's a long time to be waiting for someone to come together, to figure it out, to, you know, was he better than Josh Rosen? 1,000%. 1,000%. Should we have drafted him and moved on from Josh Rosen? 1,000%. Because we've at least had a middle of the pack quarterback, sometimes good, sometimes shit quarterback, but we didn't have Josh Rosen. So, you know, you got to look at that as a blessing, but we got to be done. We got to be done with Kyler Murray in the Valley. I think it's I've been playing defensive player of the year for Kyler Murray for 5.5 years is what it feels like. And I'm just about to take my helmet off and call it quits because it's been quite frustrating.
Yeah, no, I think we might be speaking for all Cardinals fans, and it sucks because there were such high hopes. Obviously, the Cliff Kyler experiment didn't work. This isn't on John Gannon. I think if you truly believe what he's doing and the culture that he's building, Michael Bidwell needs to empower Monty Austin-Fort and John Gannon to go out and build the team that they want. They just got stuck with Kyler Murray. So in a way, I'm almost giving John Gannon an out for having to be stuck with Kyler and to try and plot and scheme around his limitations. It's got to be tough because if John Gannon wants to drop a play that has Kyler throw on a fade, but Kyler is throwing it 10 yards short and it's getting picked off, like what do you do? What do you do?
You know, gentlemen, this is going to be my last comments on Kyler Murray right now, because guess what's going to happen this entire offseason when we don't make the playoffs, because we have completely taken everything out of our own hands and put it into everybody else's. Kyler Murray, I'm done making excuses for, right? We already went through the whole laundry list of why this and that, injury, regime change, blah, 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 blah. And then the new narrative that everybody wants to throw out firsthand of why this offense has been so disastrous, especially within the passing game this year, has been because of Drew Petzing. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not doing it. Kyler Murray had a absolutely perfect opportunity to put all of those naysayers to bed on Sunday, and he single-handedly made the two mistakes that probably lost the Arizona Cardinals that game and going to the playoffs this year. And we're also in week 13, and it looks like him and Marvin Harrison Jr. are not even on the same sheet of the same side of the paper of the page. They continue to just be so off rhythm, and they have both been healthy this entire season. So I'm done making excuses. With that being said, Kyler Murray is the quarterback of the Arizona Cardinals next year, Chris. I mean, like we already talked about it.
It's true. Like it has to be. They're handcuffed. I'm not going to pull it up now, but I don't know if it was you and I talking, but I was talking with somebody about who are the options to replace him coming up in free agency. And let me tell you guys, there are no options. So
I don't even want to know.
Yeah, honestly, the list was scary. It was scary. It was guys not even on rosters, guys that are second, third string on rosters. I mean, it sucks. You paid him that much money. So on top of who do you have to replace him, who's going to take him? I mean, I think there are teams that would take him off your hands. You know, the Raiders look fucking terrible. The Giants are bad. But, okay. So two things, because I just remembered the crazy idea I had. But then the other thing is, Would you guys rather have Kyler Murray or Trevor Lawrence right now?
Kyler Murray.
You're putting us in a lose-lose situation, Chris. I mean, what do you want from us? More misery?
With Trevor Lawrence, you get what you want. In theory, right? You get a tall pocket passer.
That's true. Bring on the vanilla offense. Sure. I'll take Trevor Lawrence just to be opposite of Nico. I like being opposite of Nico's takes. How about that?
Well, you know what? And here's the thing. I think that Trevor Lawrence needs to be away from Jacksonville. That accursed franchise and Urban Meyer ruined him. And he has been a shell of the player that we saw win a national championship ever since. I think a change of pace, Trevor Lawrence could be the next Sam Darnold, could be the Red Rock, could be like one of these guys who's like having a resurgence just as long as he gets away. So I, you know what? A Kyler for Trevor Lawrence trade, I would take that every single day of the week.
Have they paid Lawrence yet? Does he come with a roughly similar deal?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think was it this off season?
Yeah, he's got like a hefty tag, like a Daniel Jones tag, I think.
Yeah. No, I think that's exactly like I'm looking for, where's our Carson Palmer? You know, where's the guy who has tasted a little bit of success somewhere else and needs a change of scenery, you know, wants to come out here and better his golf game. And I think, yeah, I think Lawrence is a great contender for that. I loved Lawrence when he was at Clemson, you know, like the guy was a consensus number one pick for a reason. So yeah. And nobody's going to win in Jacksonville. Like, ship that team over to London already.
Look, Jacksonville has Tony Khan as president of football operations. That should tell you everything you need to know. The man showed up in a neck brace for draft day, selling a wrestling angle on TV. So if that doesn't tell you the success of Jacksonville in the future, I you know, honestly, too bad Sam Darnold found his resurgence in Minnesota, because Sam Darnold is exactly who I thought of when you were describing that, Stephen. It's like, who is our Carson Palmer? That's exactly what Sam Darnold is doing in Minnesota this year. And he'll probably get paid because of it too. I love the idea of Trevor Lawrence. I don't think it compares. He kind of strikes me as the kid that was varsity all 4 years in high school and then got the offer to ASU back in, you know, the mid 2000s. And then he didn't see the lick of the football field after that. So I don't know. Just, maybe it's his face. It doesn't sit right with me.
No, I feel like I just feel like the Valley is reeling in regard to the true thought of what has possibly happened and probably happened with Kyler Murray being a number one overall pick. We're 0-2 now, gentlemen. We're 0-2 all time in taking number one overall picks that are non-difference makers, unfortunately, in the grand scheme of things.
Okay, so some of us like Trevor Lawrence. I would take that. I mean, just if nothing else, to switch it up, change it up. Because what's the worst that's going to happen is you're just going to be looking to move Trevor after one season when we were already talking about probably wanting to move Kyler after one season. So what do you have to lose? But my other more out-of-the-box idea is keep Kyler, find a way to get another quarterback that you're actually going to put under center, and use Kyler similar to Taysom Hill. Have him line up in the slot, in the backfield. You can do a little screen. You can do a flea flicker, wildcat. Like, you don't know. Is Kyler going to throw it? Is he going to pass it? I don't know.
So he takes more hits? Are you trying to put this man in the hospital?
Yes.
For the pain that he's caused us, yes. Chris is trying to add actual pain to him, too.
Yeah, oh, are you kidding me? If you medically retire, does the rest of your contract just become forfeit at that point?
That's a great question.
I don't know.
But we need more Chris, lawyers on the round table.
You know what would happen? We would get another letter from his agent talking about how it's an absolute travesty that he's having to do anything outside of being the starting quarterback. So, I mean, if you want that, I do.
Yeah,
I did like that letter. So,
you know, the new map of Call of Duty Zombies just came out. Like, so why should we ask him to do anything else?
Yeah, I think Twitch streamer is probably his retirement gig. It's out there. It's obviously unrealistic because you're paying him so much freaking money, and on top of already, as we've talked about, not having any other option. But yeah, I just don't think he'd be willing to do it at all, and that gets a little goofy, right? Like, when you're trying to do gimmicky stuff like that, I honestly hate what the Saints are doing. I don't like I just said his name. What's his name again? Taysom Hill. That's right.
Well, but I'm pretty sure he's out for the year now.
Yeah, you're probably right. Well, fellas, I think we're getting close to winding down, but there is one last Valley sports topic. We have to get to it, guys. I know. There's some problems with the Phoenix Suns. New Kevin Durant injury update is perfect, but everything else is a disaster, writes Jack Simone of Valley of the Suns. Suns are a different team without KD to a dangerous degree. They came out, we've talked about this, they came out the gate hot when they were healthy. I think they won 9 of their first 10 or 11 games, something like that, and then just went on an absolute dud run. KD hurt his ankle, was out for 2 weeks, played 2 games. Now he's out for another week or two. Bradley Beal has been in and out of the lineup more than a Lily Phillips party. Like, it's absolutely crazy how bad the Suns have been this early in the season for a team that was being written into playoff contention and even in championship conversations with the roster that was built, having three of probably the top, safely I'll say three of the top 25 players in the league. Now, I think Bradley Beal is quickly taking himself out of that conversation, but still at bare minimum, then you're still giving yourself at least two in the top 25, probably two in the top 10 or 15. There's a lot I could say, but I want you guys to have your time to air your grievances.
I'll start it out right now. It was a mistake to ever trade for KD. We leveraged and mortgaged our future by trading for him. We had Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges. We had a young core that was exciting. It was the Valley Boys. And let me tell you, there's never been a better team than the 2020 Bubble Suns. I will die on that hill. It is the only team to go undefeated in the bubble. I don't care if it was a Mickey Mouse tournament, because that is what we needed. We needed the good and the like Cinderella story of these guys, just like with ASU, where it's feel good. You see young guys succeeding. And what do? We say, you know what? Let's get away. Let's trade for a 35-year-old, 37-year-old Kevin Durant, who, yes, he knows ball. He is a certified hooper when he can play a full game.
Well, and that's what Mike's talked about at nauseam, is like how bad of a situation are the Suns in, where our only hope is our 37-year-old forward or 36-year-old forward. Ah, God, Steven, I'm dying to know what you think of the Suns' current state of affairs.
So I've heard this. I'm married to someone who is a strong, strong hater on the KD trade. It was a dark day in our house. Bridges and Cam are, you know, they're always going to be fan favorites, and I still want to see good things happen to them. But look, I mean, you had to make that move. It was too perfect. When you have a chance to bring a Hall of Famer in, it's just, KD is one of the most natural scorers the league has ever seen. He's an absolute bucket when he's healthy. You know that the injury risks were coming. It's unfortunate, but I don't think it's all over yet. Because guys, I don't know if you've seen the news, but help is on the way. We're getting Jimmy Butler, okay? Jimmy Buckets is coming to town. The Heat are going to help us out. They're going to take that Beal trade, okay? We're going to get Fallout Boy himself. I couldn't be more excited, okay? You cannot be a basketball fan and not love Jimmy. Like, get this guy into a Suns jersey right now. I am so stoked. I don't even know why this rumor is out there or how much truth or validity there is to it. Shams is talking about it, so there must be something. But you guys, like, does Jimmy make sense on this team? Does he solve all of our problems?
Because I got your picture. I'm coming with you. I'm trying not to get this, like, taken down.
Steven, I think it's interesting that you brought this up, because I was thinking about this today, because I know Jimmy Butler's agent now has, like, publicly fought back with Shams over this whole thing and the truth and the validity over the Suns specifically. This is classic. Like, do you remember, it was maybe like 5 or 6, maybe 7 years ago now, we traded for, I believe, a Gerald Green or a player with the last, no, it was Shannon Brown. It was a Brown situation. And we couldn't even get the name right as to the right player that we traded for. It does not surprise me.
We ended up with Kwame Brown or something.
God, it was crazy. It was a wild thing.
It works. So I see that. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but I see the trade machine up here. It works if you throw Josh Richardson in.
Okay. Let me try that. That's
like former son. Oh no, that Josh Richardson.
Okay. All right. Okay, so the Heat can't take on too much money. They have to give up a little extra coin. I see.
Nico, Nico, you're thinking about Jason Richardson. Yeah, Steve Jason Nash's illegitimate children's dad.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. This is so true. You're Miami. Are you willing? And you're Pat Riley. Are you sitting there? Are you going to take Bradley Beal on, given exhibition that you've seen from him here in Phoenix. And I say exhibition because I think he's played all of like 18 games, it feels like. So, like, honestly, this – oh, man. The Suns sometimes are such a Mickey Mouse organization, and we shoot ourselves in the foot before I said this when we traded for Durant. I love the idea of Durant, and I think that Steven's right. You absolutely had to take that trade when it was put in front of you. But we absolutely mortgaged the future of the franchise 1,000% the second that we put Cam and Mikal available. We knew that that was a deal with the devil, signed in blood, that had options of implications, that being that Kevin Durant is old as dirt and he's still skinny as shit and his legs can't hold up anymore. And it's all the concerns we've heard about Kevin Durant, I don't know, since he came into the fucking league. So it's frustrating, but that's where we're at. And we knew that we sold our soul to the devil. It sucks, but get Bradley Beal the fuck out of town. That's where
I understand the frustration, but how many of those early season games did KD bail us out of? Like, it seemed like for a while there was a stretch where the only reason we were winning close games was because KD took over and did hero ball. So, like, I mean, come on, give the man some credit. Like, he's part of the reason we've had the small semblance of success that we've had so far this year.
But we shouldn't be in a position where we go and have to rely on KD for hero ball, especially at the beginning of a season. We need to have a somewhat competent scheme and the players there enough to move the ball and have a consistent scoring throughout, where you can't just be like the triple threat that we are right now, because that's not working. They play barely any games together anyway, because Beal or Durant or Booker are all fighting injuries, which is exactly like which other former super team? The Brooklyn Nets.
But I would also say, hold on, sorry, Chris, but I would also say that I thought that this was supposed to be Devin Booker's team, right? So when you do lose somebody like Kevin Durant, or you have time frames where one of those guys, Bradley Beal or Kevin Durant, is out, Devin Booker is supposed to be the leader. And even when all three are there, you play through him. But Kevin Durant is still such a prolific scorer. The offense revolves around what he can do. And Steven, you said it perfectly. Yeah, KD has bailed us out, especially with that 9-1 start. You can think about the Sixers game. I mean, both of those Los Angeles Clippers wins in LA as well. And I know Yusuf Nurkic hit the free throw to beat the Mavericks in Dallas, but you know, a lot of that was still on the back of KD, and I think that's what we've seen with him out of the lineup. Guys don't know how to step up within a roles where they have to take over, and unfortunately Devin Booker has been shooting probably some of the worst percentages of his career. I think over this last three game road trip where we lost to Miami, Orlando, and the absolute god awful loss to the New Orleans Pelicans, he was shooting under 34%. So I thought it was his team. I think that's what's disheartening me right now. And I thought D-Book was the guy, but I feel like he maybe is still kind of stuck in Paris and his mentality of being the fit-in guy instead of being the guy now.
That's such a good point. And that's, I think, the bigger storyline here is that KD's injuries are getting all the press, but Book has lost that killer instinct and really hasn't shown up with it at all since the Olympics. So I hope he finds it. I know he does. We've all seen him at his best, but yeah, it's this team really just needs to, they need some kind of shock. They need a statement win, really. And I just don't know where on the schedule that's going to come from.
Well, Mike, I like that you brought that point up too, because I was sitting here kind of thinking the same thing is we're coming for Kyler Murray's head. And we kind of need to also have that same approach with Devin Booker. Not that he's in – obviously, Devin has delivered much more than Kyler has as far as the fact that we went to the NBA Finals and all that kind of shit. But, like, this is Book's team, man. This is Book's team, without a question, without a doubt. This is Devin Booker's team. So, like, who should be bailing us out, the 37-year-old Kevin Durant or Devin Booker, the dude who famously put up 70-something? Like, I mean – it's, for me, it's frustrating, and I think you nailed it right on the head. It's a little saddening to be at the point where, like, Kevin Durant is almost the oldest brother in this scenario, where he has to dig his little brothers out of trouble. Like it's it can't be that. Not when your little brother can go off for 50 at the blink of an eye.
I'm at the point where I want to see Grayson Allen just start tripping people. Like, can we just get this in there? Like, because we saw with my takes on the Cardinals and now my takes on the Suns is, guys, I'm trying so hard not to become a Dallas sports fan. Like, the Stars already got me now because we don't have a hockey team anymore. So that's fair. Come on, please help me. This is a personal plea. Just be better.
Ben also really wants us to be villains, right? Because he was also talking about how he kind of wants Kenny to do it too. Hey, that's okay. I mean, that's what's also happening with the Suns team. There's just not dogs right now. Like, I can't pinpoint, and I want to say, like, Royce O'Neal, he's a dog, right? No, like, you can't say Grayson Allen is a dog right now because he's been in and out of the lineup as well. But I got to ask this question to you guys because I've been pondering this specifically, obviously, over, you know, probably the past 3 weeks with KD out. Guys, what does Bradley Beal do exceptionally well? Can somebody educate me?
Can he waste money?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think he plays professional basketball.
But on the basketball court, what does Bradley Beal do exceptionally well better than anybody else whenever he is on the floor? Is there anything that he does?
If we're being generous, like when he had that first step, he was a slasher. You know, like the dude got to the rim and he was the lockdown defender on a series of historically bad Wizards teams. So I worry that much like with Kyler and his quickness, Beal losing that step, like he's kind of lost what made him a star in the first place. Because I agree, he's kind of just a mediocre replacement level player when he's not feeling it. And it seems like that happens more often than not.
Steven, I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, there's times where the explosivity still kind of shows, right? When he attacks the basket, he can get guys kind of stretching a little bit. And when he does have that first step, he can finish at the rim with the best of them. But the injuries have obviously caused so many issues for him within that, I think, for his psyche, man, and him really understanding that that's still what makes Bradley Beal special. I also wonder how much of it is, you know, within the Mike Budenholzer scheme about shooting 40 plus three pointers and, you know, who else is going to do that if he's not doing his part within that. But yeah, his amount of turnovers are starting to be a crazy concern of mine as well, because we already did this song and dance last year with Bradley Beal and Devin Booker running the point guard position that was not successful. Why is Tyus Jones not really commanding the basketball from the point guard position way more and getting those guys within their sets to make quick decisions and put up shots instead of coming down and still having Bradley Beal set up things and make these stupid turnovers? Like, it's just odd. And I think the Suns they're all over the place right now. And obviously all over the place has led to a lot of losses. But they got to do something quickly, guys. And I don't, it's not make a trade right now. It's not start playing Josh Okogie more. Chris, you always say this. If Josh Okogie is your leading scorer, you are in a heap load of trouble, which is the damn truth. But it's about locking back in and winning some of these games where you absolutely have to. And it starts with Utah. At least we get Utah, right? The only win that we've had without Kevin Durant. When he hasn't been in the lineup.
That's awful.
I agree. But I also think, like, okay, we've been a little spoiled the last couple of years. You know, like, let's keep in mind that this is a team with a brand new coach. Okay, this is not a core. We had so much turnover, particularly on the bench. A lot of new pieces. Budenholzer brings a system with him. So, like, we're 23 games into a relatively new experiment. sky high expectations. Okay, being around 500, it's not necessarily as bad, I think, as it has, you know, as it looks right now. So I'm not panicking yet. Everyone always says season, the casual fan doesn't start watching until Christmas anyway. Okay, so this is almost like preseason. And guess who's playing on Christmas this year? We got the Nuggets. Okay, so that to me, that is our must win game. You got to show up on national TV. You got it. Like, I want to see them absolutely handle the Nuggets and should show up. And I think that is what, that's your get right game. That's what that gives us the momentum into the final, you know, 60% of the season.
Yeah, I think it's still early. I don't want to hit the panic alarm just yet. I don't want to jump off a cliff. It sucks now having seemingly the same conversation for like the second, third year in a row of, oh, this team will be really good. We just got to get healthy. Oh, we just need to get Brad Beal out there. Oh, once everyone's healthy, it'll be good. I think we should stop waiting for everyone to get healthy and just say whether it's one, two, or three stars on the court, whoever it is who's available needs to step up, and we need to win games without these guys in the lineup. And Mike, going back to what you said, it does start with Devin Booker, and I need him to show up. This is his worst field goal shooting year since his junior season. And it's kind of crazy. If these stats are correct, he shot the exact same field goal percentage, 42.3, in his first three seasons. And that's exactly what he's shooting this season is 42.3. Or I'm sorry, he's at 43.2, so he's just above it. But his points are down. He's 2 points a game, 3 points a game down from where he was last year, playing the most minutes he's played in his entire career. So I do worry. I think you hit the nail on the head. It could very well be Olympic hangover, the role he was playing on that team. What he did all summer training was to be that role, and now he's having trouble turning it back on. Never what you want to see or hear from about your star, but you're right. This is Booker's team, and he needs to show it by winning games and taking over when Kevin Durant is out of the lineup. And honestly, just plan for not having Brad Beal. Just assume that he's not going to be available, so when he is there, it's a little bit of a bonus, a little bit extra.
It's a bonus, and plan for not having Bradley Beal, Chris, because we're going to trade for Jimmy Butler. How about that? That's the last thing I'll say.
All I want for Christmas is the Suns to get rid of Bradley Beal. And if we get Jimmy Butler, that would be good. I won't even need a Christmas present next year if we get Jimmy Butler for Brad Beal. That would be chef's kiss.
If we get Jimmy Butler, that is a Suns championship. I will just say yes immediately. Lock them in.
You would hope. But I did text Mike when the news broke, and he pointed out that Jimmy Butler is also fairly injury prone. So, you know, it could be out of the frying pan and into the fryer. But, hey, at least we wouldn't have Brad Beal then, am I right? Fellas, we're a little bit over the hour and a half mark here. Nico had to take off a little bit early, so he sends his regards to the chat and the Valley of – I'm plugging our podcast. The Valley of the Suplex family, the Valley Sports Plug family. I did not forget the name of our brand here. Don't worry about me, guys. But – want to go around the horn one last time, let you guys share your final thoughts and any shout outs you might have. So we'll start, let's go bottom right. We'll start with the younger Miller, and then we'll have Steven go.
Wow. You know, here's the thing. It is the Christmas season. I'm in the spirit of giving. I felt like I ended that call on a lot of hate that I was giving towards the Cardinals and the Suns, and all of it was well-deserving. But I want to give all of my Arizona sport fandom to our Sun Devils that play January 1st. We're starting 2025 with a win. Give us Clemson. Give us Texas. I don't care who it is. Kenny's going to have these guys running through a wall, and we are ready. We are coming.
I love it, Ben. You know, I'm ready for this. We've got 2 weeks of hype, and I know we'll be talking, you know, pretty much every day exclusively about this game. I'm going to switch gears real quick. We were talking about the Suns. I have to give a shout out. If you have not been to the Mullet yet for a G League Valley Suns game, you got to get yourself there. I went to opening night. It was electric. Tickets are affordable. The Mullet, you know, it only holds about 3,000-4,000 people. It feels like a college crowd. It's a blast. The team is fun. You've got John Stockton's son out there dishing dimes. You've got Ty Washington. He's going to be in the league any minute now. He could be the missing piece that helps save this Suns team. Ray, the mascot, we've got our own Gritty. Like, I am a Valley Suns boy through and through after one game. Get yourself out there and check him out.
I love it. Gentlemen, Bronny James was here in the Valley tonight too. We might have dropped the ball on that one, Chris. We could have saw Bronny, but that's all right, because I would much rather be here chopping it up with the Miller brothers. Steven, I think this is my first official podcast stream with you, because you've done our ASU stream, so it was a pleasure. Ben, it's always good to see you. I really hope you guys have an awesome, awesome Christmas and a new year. And my last shout out, Chris, you always get the shout out. You know you're my guy. But my last shout out has to go to our guy, Nico, because he is imminently going to be a first-time dad, probably in like tomorrow. So we appreciate him dropping by today. He's got a lot more important things going on right now. So I know he would say he loves the VSP family, and we love all you guys for joining us, supporting us in 2024, and we're looking forward to 2025. But Chris, that's all I got, man. Appreciate you, brother.
Well said, Mike. I appreciate you. I'm so thankful for you now that we're in the holiday season and the season of being thankful. Thankful for Ben and Steven for joining, and Nico as well. If he were here, he'd also probably tell you to check out Valley of the Suplex. That's our pro wrestling podcast. We have a new episode coming out for you tomorrow. That's episode 6. We try and do those every 2 weeks to keep you all updated on what's going on in that world. But like Mike just said, Nico's having a kid, so we might have to put it on pause for a little bit. The episodes might come out sporadically, but stick with us. We're getting that podcast up and rolling, and all a part of everything we're doing here at Valley Sports Plug, trying to keep bringing you the best and most entertaining Arizona sports coverage and opinions. Love Steven's spicy takes. Love Ben coming on here, joining with his optimism and all that. But holy shit, guys, if you've made it an hour and 42 minutes into this podcast, we thank you so much. You're probably already subscribed, but maybe send this video to your mom, your cousin, your best friend, the enemy you absolutely hate, people you haven't talked to till high school. Just spread the word. Make sure everybody's following Valley Sports Plug. That's at AZ_VSP on Instagram, X, TikTok, Threads, right here, Valley Sports Plug on YouTube. Just go ahead, Google Valley Sports Plug, and you'll find all of our social medias. But I just want to say one last time, thank you guys so much. It's always a pleasure, always a privilege. For Michael Benjamin, Mr. Steven Miller, and Ben Miller, I'm Chris Patrick, and we'll see you next time. Peace.